The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from theteenmagazine.com, Barbie, A Masterful Exploration of the Human Experience. This article was written by Alia Miller, and there is a note. The article contains spoilers. If you haven't gotten to watching Barbie yet, please do. Greta Gerwig's Barbie is a testament not only to being a woman, but to being human in general. It explores the intricacies of our mortality, empathy, and creativity. A film full of fun tunes and hilarious quips about the talking stage, it displays its message in a palatable way. Here, Gerwig reels her audience in, going for the hook, line, and sinker in the final moments of the film. Womanhood Explored by Women. Barbie is an incredible dissection of the journey from girlhood to womanhood. The famous doll is sent to the real world after she notices some peculiarities in Barbie world: flat feet, cellulite, and thoughts of death. Her sudden undesirableness is a direct parallel to how girls wake up one day and are no longer gifted with the naivete of childhood. Taking note of the aspects of themselves that are looked down upon by society. Barbie's overwhelming thoughts about death are representative of the looming anxieties many people have. It's a pretty simple allegory, yet the way Barbie was frowned upon for voicing her concerns is similar to how those with mental health issues are treated in our world. Barbie then covers up her mental state with a smile, something many women are once again socially pressured to do. On a more satirical point, Barbie makes many comments about the female experience, such as, "I would never wear heels if my feet were shaped this way," as commentary on how women are expected to wear heels in certain instances despite their discomfort. Gloria's Monologue. Gloria, America Ferrera, delivers a monologue that is another tool used to examine womanhood and its relationship with society. Ferrera's powerful performance showcases her talent as an actor, but also the brilliance of Gerwig as a writer. The scene takes place when Barbie, Gloria, and Gloria's daughter Sasha return to Barbieland, only to find it overruled by Kens. The other Barbies, essentially brainwashed by their counterparts, are in places of servitude. While not all women are in such positions in our world, a majority of women work under men. The transition from Barbieland to Kendom is representative of the innate pattern present in our society. Men tend to hold places of power, while women tend to serve them. Like, we have to always be extraordinary, but somehow we're always doing it wrong. Barbie sobs to Gloria about how she doesn't feel pretty enough to be stereotypical Barbie, followed, of course, by a quip from the narrator. She rants about how she doesn't feel as exceptional as the other Barbies, who are Nobel Prize winners, political leaders, and scientists. Her self-consciousness is a parallel to the circumstances women face in the professional world. We must be exceptional to be accepted, yet we can never be more successful than our male peers. You have to never get old, never be rude, never show off, never be selfish, never fall down, never fail, never show fear, never get out of line. It's too hard. Women are held to an impossible standard and are subsequently berated for not meeting it. We must be nurturing, accommodating, and self-effacing. When we step out of this highly detailed mold, we are deemed unlikable. While upholding these personality traits, we must also stay youthful. Stretch marks, cellulite, and wrinkles are strictly forbidden. If we do have them, we are deemed undesirable. The stress placed on women in our society is outrageous, and we must step out of our molds in order to change that. The Struggle of Boyhood. Ken's loss of innocence is a topic also explored throughout the film. As he and Barbie enter the real world, he realizes the intrinsic power he has as a man, while Barbie feels uncomfortable as a woman. He goes from being ignored by Barbie to essentially establishing the patriarchy in Barbie land. By the end of the movie, he realizes that what he did was wrong and woefully apologizes to Barbie. It was apparent that he felt pressured by the other Kens to be with Barbie and so was angry when denied. This anger caused him to create Kendom, where the Barbies were servants and lost their dream houses. This paradox is an overwhelming common thing men experience. Media and social pressures push boys to behave in traditionally masculine ways and to date the hottest girl. Then they compete with each other, pushing away the potential for emotionally intimate friendships. Men are also expected to hold back their emotions, something Ken does as well. Rather than expressing himself, he chose to create Kendom, harming other people in the process. Barbie's encapsulation of these anomalies present in the male experience pushes against them, encouraging men to be like Alan rather than Ken. Many critics were taken aback by this commentary, pushing the rhetoric that Barbie was a misandrist film. However, it portrays the opposite. Both Barbie Land and Kendom are bad places to be. In Barbie Land, Barbies are in power while Kens are the afterthought. In Kendom, Kens are in power and Barbies are in servitude. These two worlds illustrate that the imbalance in the equality of people make the world a toxic place to live in. A groundbreaking conclusion. As Barbie looks around at her friends and her home, she laments, "I don't think I have an ending." Ruth, the creator of Barbie and the narrator, tells her that her absence of ending was the whole point. We do not decide our fate at the first instance of our creation, nor do our parents. Instead, we journey through life and do so then. They leave Barbie Land together and have a conversation in the liminal space between Barbie Land and the real world. Barbie asks Ruth if she can go to the real world and live as human. Her creator replies with the most heart-wrenching line of the film, "You don't need my permission. I can't control you any more than I could control my own daughter. I named you after her, Barbara, and I always hoped for you to be like I hoped for her. We mothers stand still, so our daughters can look back and see how far they've come." Gerwig proposes a final commentary on motherhood. Mothers sacrifice for their children with the hopes they exceed where they originate from. However depressing this line is, it places emphasis on the beauty of motherhood. The love of a mother is something that cannot be replicated, no matter how hard we try. It also illustrates that parents must let go of their children at one point. We cannot hold our mothers' hands forever. Ruth then tells Barbie to close her eyes and to feel. She sees the beauty of being human and a woman through the medium of home movies. The feelings this ignites in viewers is impossible to put into words, but it is definitely the heart of the film. Barbie's decision is such an intense point in the film. She has experienced the worst of human emotions, dejection, sadness, embarrassment, yet she chooses to come to the human world. She saw the beauty in being able to feel such a variety of emotions, a fact something we all need to consider. It is lovely we are able to experience sadness. It's better than not being able to feel anything at all. Barbie then battles with the most essential part of being human, acceptance. Greta Gerwig provides a tribute to the crew and those close to their hearts in the ending portion of the film. The montage of women Barbie sees are all women either working on the film or women who made an impact on the crew. Gerwig also stated that the decision to include the home videos was to include something truly made by the people. Barbie is most definitely a love story, just not one between Barbie and Ken. Rather, it is a love affair between women and womanhood. Women of all ages dressed in pink to go see Barbie in the theaters. While this may be a simple decision for many, it is a way to relive our childhoods. Where many of us were conditioned to hate pink to fit in, we had the opportunity to return to our childhood love for dressing up. Barbie undeniably united women, a beautiful and incredible feat. And our next article from the teenmagazine.com. In the Barbie world, everything the Margot Robbie starrer did right. And this article was written by Meenakshi Jha. The live-action Barbie movie has definitely restored the summer box office to the Barbie pink of its health. Having already earned more than $300 million, the film is slated to become one of the highest earners in Hollywood history. While the success of this fantasy comedy is superficially attributed to its ensemble cast and its impeccable direction, there is so much more to its appeal. Here goes a list of things that the filmmakers did phenomenally well to make Barbie an endearing and enthralling watch for generations to come. 1. The album. Produced by Mark Ronson, the soundtrack of the Margot Robbie starrer is full of songs that convey profound emotions in a Barbie-esque fashion, but still manage to be extremely visceral in their depiction of our quotidian struggles as human beings. With songs ranging from the groovy Watati sung by Carol G and Aldo Ranks to the highly relatable What I Was Made For by Billie Eilish, the Barbie album has something for everyone. Impressively enough, the lineup of the artists is quite diverse too, and it is certainly that listeners across all age groups will be able to find a new favorite from the track list. 2. Strategic brand collaborations. From Airbnb to Burger King, from Aldo to Dragon Glassware, the list of brands that have doused their commodities and services in the shades of pink popularized only by Barbie does not seem to end. These astute promotional tie-ups not only gave the movie unparalleled visibility, but also ensured great profits for the companies that hopped onto the bandwagon. It is not an exaggeration to say that the greatest blockbuster this year is not the live-action Barbie movie itself, but its marketing team. Special mention to Barbieheimer memes, Ryan Gosling's GQ interview titled 10 Things Ryan Gosling Can't Live Without, and the Barbie Dreamhouse tour by none other than the on-screen Barbie, Margot Robbie herself. 3. The iconic costumes. The costume department, headed by the Academy Award-winning designer Jacqueline Duran, took inspiration from Barbie's outfits over the years to replicate the same looks in the film. This gave the whole movie a nostalgic undertone and was highly instrumental in heightening its allure. Be it the evergreen striped swimsuit from the 1950s or the skater look from the 1990s, the outfits donned by Margot Robbie in the movie will be remembered for ages to come due to the keen attention to detail that went into making them. 4. The diverse movie cast. The film has garnered appreciation for including actors like Simu Liu as Ken No. 2 and Ritu Arya as journalist Barbie, as they come from communities that are not showcased enough on screen. The cast also features Nikuti Gatwa, America Ferreira, and Issa Rae, along other notable actors. Their roles in the movie are seen as stepping stones to better representation of minorities in the mainstream media. Movies with a message, especially ones with a feminist subtext, can be considered preachy if not done right. Barbie breaks all barriers, though, and deftly makes pertinent and nuanced points about the subjugation of women, belongingness, and loss of innocence. The film does not turn into a sermon at any point in the movie. The Greta Gerwig directorial balances wholesomeness, hilarity, and profoundness in equal measures, justifying its over-the-peak popularity. Barbie, in most respects, is the film of the year due to the team that made it happen. So do not wait any further. Buy those movie tickets, grab a popcorn, sit back and relax as the Barbie movie takes you to the Barbie world while never losing its hold on reality. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. The Real History of Barbie: What to Know About America's Most Famous Doll. And this article was written by Cameron Katz. If you're part of the nearly 13 million people who saw Barbie on opening weekend, then you've probably spent the last week jamming to I'm Just Ken, buying all the pink clothing you can find, and spiraling about what it means to be a woman in today's society, naturally. But Greta Gerwig's Barbie was not just a plastic-filled film about Mattel's shining star. The movie also examined Barbie's long and sometimes controversial history in American culture, even including Ruth Handler, the woman who invented Barbie, played by Rhea Perlman. However, only so much can be crammed into 2 hours, so here's some of the history that Gerwig left out. 1. Ruth Handler, the creator of Barbie, was the daughter of Jewish immigrants. In Barbie, Ruth Handler may be a ghost occupying an office on the 17th floor of the Mattel building, but in real life, she was a fierce businesswoman who came from humble beginnings. According to the Contemporary Jewish Museum, Handler was the daughter of illiterate Eastern European Jewish immigrants. Her father, Jacob, immigrated to the United States in 1907 through Ellis Island and was sent to Denver, Colorado to pursue his trade as a blacksmith. Shortly after, he married Handler's mother, Ida, and the couple's first 6 children followed. Handler was born in 1916, now 1 of 10 children. When Ida fell sick, Handler went to live with her sister for most of her young adult life. At age 19, Handler moved to Los Angeles and got a job working at Paramount Studios. In 1938, she married Izzy Handler, the grandson of a Ukrainian rabbi and an artist in industrial design. He had begun experimenting with a new plastic called Lucite to create trinkets, furniture, and accessories. Handler helped sell these items, and along with her husband and a close friend, they launched the company, Mattel. In 1945, Handler wanted her daughter Barbara to have action figures like her brother Ken, so she created her own. The first Barbie doll debuted at the New York Toy Fair in March 1959, and thanks to a revolutionary TV ad, Barbie became a household name. Handler sold 300,000 dolls in that first year, and the success only continued from there. The Handler family's Jewish identity remained important throughout their lives. Izzy, who had Americanized his name and changed it to Elliot, and Ruth helped found Temple Isaiah in Los Angeles in 1946. Handler was also honored as the first woman of distinction of the United Jewish Appeal. 2. Barbie's first dream house didn't have a kitchen. Few aspects of the Barbie universe are as iconic as the dream house. Barbie's dream house first came on the market in 1962, and it was complete with a television and record player, but no kitchen. According to 1960 census data, 55% of women aged 25 to 29 years old were unemployed, married, and taking care of children under 6 years old. Although some women returned to work as the children got older, more than half of American women remained in the home. Barbie's kitchenless dream house offered an alternative vision for young girls, a home life free of domesticity, and a space that was her own. For most women in the 1960s, this idea really was an unattainable dream. While women had been legally able to own property since the 1800s, women were largely prevented from owning homes or even cars. Because women were not allowed to have mortgages, credit, or bank accounts without their husband's signatures, only 0.1% of women were homeowners the year that Barbie's dream house came out. And Barbie stayed ahead of the game for over a decade. The rule requiring a husband's signature didn't change until the passage of the Equal Credit Opportunity Act in 1974. The advent of Barbie's dream house created a reality that didn't exist yet, and Barbie would continue breaking barriers in the job market, too. 3. Barbie often held careers in male-dominated industries years before women actually got the job. Barbie is probably best known for her variety of careers, 200 and counting. But a lesser known fact is that Barbie was taking on these jobs several years before her real life counterparts. For example, in 1962, the same year that Barbie got her dream house, she became a professional tennis player. That came 8 years before Title IX, which paved the way for many women to participate in sports, was enacted, and 9 years before Billie Jean King's famous Battle of the Sexes match against the self-proclaimed male chauvinist pig, Bobby Riggs. Barbie also made the journey to space in 1965, 18 years before Sally Ride, the first American woman to make the journey. And according to the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, Mattel released a Black Barbie astronaut in 1985 as a part of its efforts to include more diverse dolls in the 1980s. Mae C. Jemison, the first Black female astronaut, went to space 7 years later. Throughout the rest of the 20th century, Barbie continued to take on jobs in male-dominated fields, from being a CEO to an airline pilot to a NASCAR driver. She was a symbol for girls everywhere that they could be whoever they wanted, years before the dream became attainable for women. Plus, Barbie became president in 1992, so we're still 31 years behind on that one. 4. Earring Magic Ken is considered the most financially successful Ken doll in Barbie history. You may remember Earring Magic Ken as one of the discontinued dolls hanging out with Weird Barbie in the Barbie movie. And it's true. Earring Magic Ken was a real thing, and he was super financially successful. In 2020, the New York Historical Society added an Earring Magic Ken to their collections, and his story is an interesting one. Ken joined the Barbie universe in 1961. But by 1993, Mattel was looking to give Barbie's bow an update to reflect what was cool in the 1990s. Naturally, they reached out to a group of 5- and 6-year-olds to get their input on Ken's new look. The girls gave Ken a serious makeover. He swapped his preppy 60s clothes for a lavender leather vest and mesh shirt, plus black jeans and loafers. Ken also bleached his hair and added a silver pendant and matching earring on his left ear. Although earrings have become more gender neutral in recent years, that was not the case in 1993. Many LGBTQ+ commentators took notice of Ken's new style and jewelry, and many questioned if Ken was actually gay. His clothes matched what many young gay men on the club scene wore at the time, and some commentators even suggested that Ken's pendant was a sex toy. Mattel found themselves embroiled in controversy and quickly pulled Earring Magic Ken from the shelves, but it's believed that he was the most financially successful Ken doll ever. He's more than just Ken. 5. Barbenheimer is real. Army veteran Robert Yutaka Hosake worked for Mattel and donated his collection of 300-plus Barbies to a New Jersey museum. Barbenheimer is the latest popular culture crossover, and many people did a double screening of Barbie and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer over the weekend. Although Barbie and World War II history may not appear to have much in common, one former soldier might disagree. Today, the Millville Army Airfield Museum, a small military history museum in New Jersey, has a vast collection of World War II-era memorabilia, including war posters, newspaper articles, and flags. But the museum also houses a collection of over 300 Barbies. The collection came from Robert Yutaka Hosake, who, as a child, was incarcerated in a U.S. concentration camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. When he graduated from college, Hosake enlisted in the U.S. Army and became a Green Beret. After serving in the military, Hosake got a job at Mattel as a master model builder, where he worked on the design and execution of hundreds of Barbies. In 2004, Hosake donated his vast collection to the Seabrook Education Cultural Center in the town where his family was sent after their incarceration. The Culture Center didn't have enough room for the collection, so they lent it to the Millville Army Airfield Museum, where it remains to this day. Although Barbie has surely had her fair share of victories and controversies over the years, she has constantly evolved to reflect cultural changes surrounding what it means to be a girl. From her creation, Barbie has attempted to show young girls a world full of opportunity and empowerment, even when several barriers still held women back. Gerwig's vision of Barbie not only honors the history of this icon, but also provides an incisive critique of how patriarchy continues to harm everyone. I mean, Ken asking if he's still hot when he's in his feelings? If that's not showing how patriarchy harms men, I don't know what is. We expect a lot out of Barbie, just as we place impossible expectations on women all the time. But as the history shows, Barbie has been leading the way for decades. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Lizzo responds to harassment lawsuit, calls allegations outrageous and unbelievable. And this article was written by Brittany McNamara. After three of Lizzo's former backup dancers filed a shocking lawsuit against her, the singer has spoken out in a statement posted to social media. The lawsuit, filed in Los Angeles Superior Court, accuses Lizzo, her dance captain Shirlene Quigley, and her production company Big Girl Big Touring Inc. of sexual harassment, disability discrimination, racial harassment, false imprisonment, and more. Lizzo released a statement on social media about the lawsuit, calling the claims outrageous and sensationalized. Usually, I choose not to respond to false allegations, but these are as unbelievable as they sound and too outrageous to not be addressed. The sensationalized stories are coming from former employees who have already publicly admitted that they were told their behavior on tour was inappropriate and unprofessional. Lizzo wrote that she is passionate as an artist, which can require hard work and high standards, but noted that she never intends to make anyone uncomfortable. I am not here to be looked at as a victim, but I also know that I am not the villain that people and the media have portrayed me to be these last few days, she continued. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.